We are back at it, and it is a special edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. We are back at it for the 100th time. This is the 100th episode. We are making like Mike Gundy. Joining me is Kyle Porter. Kyle, we've made it to the century mark.
It's pretty crazy. This was a little bit of a lark. I had kind of done a podcast off and on since I started the blog, but we just started texting about it last year, and we're like, let's do it. Now we've got sponsors, and we've made it to 100. It's pretty cool, pretty fun.
It's a lot of fun, and the football team's been cooperating, because I remember you texted me at the Texas game last year. It was about 1,000 degrees on the field. I was just a sweaty mess, and you're like, let's do a podcast. And I was like, well, if the games turn out like this one, because that was really kind of the beginning of the cardiac Cowboys, when the punter fumbled the snap from Texas and OSU somehow won the game with J.W. Walsh running the veer on 3rd and 15.
the Ray Guy Award finalist, Texas punter.
Yeah, that's a joke. I mean, I'm sure he's punted fine, but I'll remember is him dropping a punt.
Our 100th podcast, we've had a lot of fun guests. We were not able to secure Mike Holder for the 100th podcast like I wanted to, but we've got an even better guest today.
You could have had Boone Pickens on.
Yeah,
you let that one slip through your fingers too.
Yeah, I did. I'm like Justin Gilbert against OU in 2013.
Oh, too soon.
Wow. It's time for the Coop Aleworks guest of the week. Coop Aleworks, brewing great tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale, or the refreshing Horny Toad Blonde. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Aleworks, and please remember to drink responsibly. You know, with holidays coming up, Thanksgiving, Christmas, people might need a lot of Coop. I mean, with the election that just happened and people getting together with their parents, it might be a good idea to stock up on Coop before you endure the holidays.
Well, and it's an eclectic group of flavors. You can pair it with just about anything in the holiday time. You can go with the DNR, which honestly, when your crazy uncle's telling weird stories, you might need a DNR. I like the amber probably pairs well with some brown gravy. I mean, I could go on and on. There's a Coop for every meal and every relative.
If anybody starts talking about the states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and they're not talking about the college football playoff, then it might be time. It might be
finish
time
your beer.
For a DNR. Yeah, yeah.
Finish your beer if that comes up.
We've got a fun guest today. Do you want to take a stab at his name? Because
you don't know how to say it, do you?
No, I don't. Which is embarrassing.
It's okay. Joining us will be Eddie Radosovich. He works for Sooner Scoop, the OU rival site. Since it's Bedlam Week, we need a little crimson flavor on the pod, and he's a great follow on Twitter. He's a great dude, and he always brings a unique perspective. Let's give him a call.
Is it Bedlam Week, by the way? Are we already calling it Bedlam Week?
It's basically Bedlam Week. We get a 2-week detour this year.
Yeah, it is weird because it's
kind of, I think it's like, it sucks. Like, yeah. Oh, hey, Eddie, what's up, man?
What's going on?
Are you in like a Best Buy? Are there TVs going on?
No, we just got done doing our podcast.
Oh, okay.
For Sooner Scoop.
Man, you're a podcasting fool. You're on ours. You're on yours.
I'm doing double duty today.
Okay, cool.
Well, how's it going? What's Thanksgiving looking like for you personally? What are you doing this weekend?
Oh, I'm not going to do much. One of my best friends actually getting married this weekend. So, doing the groomsman duty Saturday afternoon, but Thursday will be just completely enthralled with ham and green bean casserole and all that kind of good stuff.
Carson, what's your Thanksgiving go-to food of choice?
You know, I don't get too crazy with it. I love turkey with brown gravy like that. And it has to be dark meat. I'm not a white meat guy. Dark meat, brown gravy. And I don't know about you guys. This is more like an Oklahoma Southern thing. I have to have some macaroni and cheese with my Thanksgiving meal. And obviously, I'll dabble in the dressing and all that, but that doesn't really do a whole bunch for me. But those are my go-tos.
Yeah.
I'm so into green bean casserole. We have to have two settings of it. because I could eat a whole one. That's my livelihood, is green bean casserole.
Well, Eddie, you've obviously been covering OU, doing a great job. What is, by the way, your video last week of the, that was you, right, at the West Virginia midfield? How scared were you?
Yeah, it was kind of unexpected, because I was standing down by like the 20, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw the best thing about being down on the field is the crowd. You kind of base everything off of how the crowd reacts. So I know it, something big is happening if the crowd kind of goes crazy, and I noticed that they were. And so I had to run my fat butt up to the 50-yard line, and it was pretty unbelievable. It was a bunch of talking. It was a bunch of a jabbing and really nothing of substance. But it was still fun to kind of be in the middle of it. I felt like I was back in my old high school days. I would have taken a sucker punch at somebody if I could have, but it was a lot of fun.
That had been building, hadn't it, Eddie? Like, there was a lot of smack talk on social media between OU and West Virginia, and those two schools really just don't like each other. But doesn't OU always kind of like go around the 50 before they exit the field? Is that what happened? And then West Virginia reacted. What do you think started all that?
Yeah, no, it was before OU goes back into the locker room, they do their pregame thing, and then they end it with a punt. And usually the punt returner will stand at about the 45, but he definitely got up to the to midfield. And I think that the West Virginia players were kind of waiting around for it. And they kicked the ball, and it got to the 50-yard line, and then they started doing their jumping thing, and all of a sudden the West Virginia players were out there, and it kind of became a melee. For a second, I thought it was going to actually be something, but it was nothing compared to Leonard Fournette pushing a Florida assistant. I guess it was the same day.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say that. It didn't escalate to Leonard Fournette level. So I think Oklahoma State fans are just fired up about Bedlam. I mean, obviously, it's for the Big 12 title. It's to see who finishes fifth in the college football playoff rankings. And I guess I'm curious about how do OU fans view a Bedlam that they're supposed to win for the Big 12 title? Is there nervousness? Is there excitement? What is the general feeling amongst OU fans, do you think?
Oh, I think that it's probably the same as Oklahoma State fans, just in that it's exciting that it comes down to one game, and it's exciting that it's going to be in Norman for OU fans. But I do think that, you know, I think there's kind of two levels of OU fandoms right now. It's one that they're the ones that spell you're with O and U capitalized and probably go after you guys on Twitter. And they don't have any consciousness or thinking that Oklahoma State could actually come in and win. And then I think that there's the rational fan, the fan that has watched this defense play for 11 games this season, and that doesn't really know what they're going to kind of be going up against. I mean, I just said on our Sooner Scoop podcast, I have a hard time thinking that Oklahoma's going to be able to stop Mason Rudolph. So
yeah.
it's going to be really interesting, but I think for the most part, Oklahoma fans are extremely excited. I'm interested just in that. I don't really know what to expect from a atmosphere wise. It's going to be really interesting. I think that the Ohio State game at times kind of set a level of what probably should be expected from Oklahoma fans. And it was really good. It was probably one of the louder games that I had been to in Norman, but at the same time, I think that there's a lot of cautious optimism about can the defense get any stops, and if they can, I think that Oklahoma probably will win the game, but at the same time, it's going to be really tough to stop an Oklahoma State team that I think is playing the best football out of any team in the Big 12 right now.
What's your and maybe OU's optimism level on perhaps, you know, if they beat Oklahoma State in Bedlam, that they'll make the playoff? Do you think the fact that they're Oklahoma and the fact that they would have a conference championship, do you think that would be enough for them to get in?
I'm obsessed with the playoff. I want to talk about this for like 3 hours.
it's very interesting. I think Kyle had it right a couple of weeks ago that it's just unfathomable that people can think that Oklahoma is one of the top four teams in the country. If things go right, if they can get Michigan to win this weekend, if you can get Utah to win this weekend, and that would send a three-loss USC team to go play Washington. If Washington could get beat by Washington State, that's going to be an interesting game in Pullman on Saturday. Yeah. You know, they need so much stuff to go right for him to get back into the talk. But at the same time, I think that we've kind of been saying that for the last 3 weeks, and it seems like every week something right has happened. So, you know, I would love for a Big 12 team to get into to the college football playoff. I just think that they're working so hard uphill when you look at the other teams in this conference and the way that it's viewed nationally. It just sucks. I think that's the best way to put it. It sucks that the Big 12 is where they're at right now. But, you know, I think that they can only blame themselves for the position that they're in right now. And certainly Oklahoma moving to Houston and Ohio State.
We're all Michigan fans this weekend, Eddie.
Well, no.
I have no problem. I have no problem pulling for Big Blue.
Here's the problem, though. Here's the issue, and I hope this happens on some level. I don't know. I've wanted like 18 different things to happen. The problem is, even if Michigan wins and then goes on to win the Big Ten title against Wisconsin, and they get in the playoff at 12-1, you're gonna have either Oklahoma State or Oklahoma. Let's say it's Oklahoma because they're gonna be the favorite, winning the Big 12, finishing at 10-2. And you're going to have the Ohio State problem, and they're going to be 10-2 also, mm-hmm. and they're not going to have won their division. They will have finished third in their division, actually, but they hammered OU in Norman, and it's so crazy how that game – I mean, it certainly felt like a big game at the time, but I didn't realize or I didn't think that it would kind of come to the forefront over these last 2 weeks, and I just think people are going to point back to that and say, I mean, what do you think happens, Eddie, if OU wins the Big 12 title at 10-2, Ohio State finishes at 10-2 with losses to Michigan and Penn State?
I don't see how you can put Oklahoma in above a team that beat them by 21. But at the same time, you know, we also live in a world where you beat a team and you're ranked 20 spots below them in the AP poll at the same time. So it's just unbelievable that we live in a world where, you know, our country's biggest sport, most fascinating sport, doesn't have a way to crown a national champion. And, you know, I think that maybe more than ever, I guess the way that you can say it now is that an eight team playoff would be the way to go. But,
yeah,
you know, I don't know what they would do. I think that it probably depends on if Oklahoma won, how they won. Yeah. You know, if they won in a blowout by any chance, I guess that would probably go into it. But at the same time, I just have a hard time thinking that the Big Ten is going to be really shunned out of this thing when you have guys like Barry Alvarez sitting in a committee that his opinion is obviously respected by so many people. I don't know why. But, you know, that's the same way that I think that Barry Switzer would pull for Oklahoma. I think Barry Alvarez does the same thing for Wisconsin and for the Big Ten.
Yeah.
No doubt. Eddie, let's talk about Baker Mayfield. I remember when he was named the starter, I was dubious. I just remembered the guy at Texas Tech who threw a bunch of picks. He wasn't very big. And he really has amazed me every single week just with his quarterback ability. We obviously talk about his moxie and his swagger and his trash talking, all that crap. But he's an amazing quarterback, like especially on third down. I was really impressed. That West Virginia game got down to 13 points, and he picked up two just incredible third down throws. Just how impressive have you been with Baker Mayfield, and did you ever think he would be this good?
Yeah, and even more amazing that neither of those passes were to D.D. Westbrook. One was Mark Andrews and one was Geno Lewis. He's exceeded my expectations for sure. I remember talking to you, Carson, down in Dallas at Big 12 Media Days right before they, I think, announced that he was going to be the starter. And it really has been amazing that he comes back and, you know, for him to have a better pass completion percentage, really every statistical category offensively, he's better at this year. And that's without Sterling Shepard. And I think that a lot of people thought that, myself included, he was going to take a step back without Sterling Shepard. And, you know, I think that it's helped that D.D. Westbrook has been so good for him. But it's just the little things with Baker, and I think that, you know, you hear Lincoln Riley and Bob Stoops talk about it, and that he might be one of the smarter players that has come through Oklahoma. And, you know, I think most of the time that I brush that kind of stuff off because I think it's just kind of BS. I think it's coach talk. But with Baker, it seems like it's pretty true, and it seems like it's pretty, I guess it's pretty accurate in the way that He makes a lot of the checks before the snap, and I think that, you know, he's been put into a situation with Lincoln Riley that has been perfect for him. I think that both of their personalities really kind of match up with each other. I think that they understand a lot of, or I think that they think the same way in taking chances playing aggressively. And I think that it has certainly helped Baker. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to think that he's only a junior and he's going to come back probably for a senior season. I would think that he comes back. I don't know where he would be going if he left this season. But it is interesting that he has been so much better this season, and that's even with probably throwing more interceptions than he did a season ago. So he's definitely the catalyst for this offense, and it's going to be interesting to see what Glenn Spencer throws at him and what they can do to try and slow him up. Because I think that if you can put a little bit of pressure on him, he has had times where. I wouldn't say he's folded, but he certainly hasn't made the right decisions. And I think that when you look at Oklahoma's two losses this year, it's certainly the Houston game is the offense was the reason they didn't win the game. And so it'll be really interesting here come, I guess, a week from Saturday and see what Oklahoma State tries to do. It's been quite a ride this year, though, for Baker Mayfield. And I think that he'll probably, as of now, probably get an invite to New York City, something that he didn't get a season ago.
By the way, next year, if Rudolph and Baker Mayfield come back, I want three Bedlam games. I want end of the season, I want Big 12 title, and then I want both of them to make the playoffs.
That would be awesome. I don't know if this state could handle that, though. Like, I don't think the football IQ, while it's very high, I guess not the football IQ, but the stress level, I don't think the state could take it.
Yeah.
Just the absurd games they've played, I think it would end with Baker throwing a touchdown to himself. Like, it would be just stupid. The endings awesome. Are incredible.
He tears his ACL in the first half and heals himself at halftime and comes back out, throws a touchdown to himself. It's the only way it ends. Eddie, what's the trajectory for Lincoln Riley? Because... He's a younger guy, has obviously been successful. He's got pretty clearly the best offense in the Big 12, maybe the best in the country. What's his path? Where does he go from here? And what is what does he want to do next?
That's a great question. I've always thought that I guess I can't say that I've always thought that he'd come back next season. But I do think that in some weird way, he's wrapped in with Baker Mayfield.
It's like Cliff and Johnny.
Yeah, a little bit. I think so. I don't think that they probably party. I don't think Lincoln and Baker get after it as hard as Cliff and Johnny did. But I would love if they did, though. That would be awesome. That's just a personal side note. I just don't know what jobs are going to be open. I think that, for Oklahoma fans, I think the Houston thing is very intriguing. I think it's very scary, probably, just in that if Tom Herman leaves, I think Lincoln Riley would be the automatic, probably on top five in that for Houston to go after. They don't have a problem throwing around money. At the same time, though, I think that, I think Lincoln Riley really appreciates where he's at. I don't think he's going to just take a job to be taking a job. I think there's plenty of examples of that, of maybe taking a job before you're really truly ready to take over a program. I think that, he can look back at his alma mater and maybe use that as an example. And that, if Texas Tech had $9.5 million coming up this season, Cliff Kingsbury would be looking for a job by the end of probably December. Yeah. So I just don't know what he's looking for. And I think that he's obviously a guy that when he goes in to interview for a job, he's going to blow the socks off people. He's going to be a very impressive interview. At the same time, I think that, I don't know if it's too early to say this, but depending on how long Bob Stoops is around, in my personal opinion, I think he'd be a guy that Oklahoma would probably, I don't know if they would give him the job, but I think he'd be somebody they look at. I just don't know if you can give a job like Oklahoma to a guy that hasn't ever been a head coach. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens after this season. I think that Houston job certainly is one that that really, I think, probably has a lot of people worried. And it's going to be really interesting to see just who kind of attracts Lincoln Riley. Because just from a X and an O standpoint, from talking to the media standpoint, he's probably one of the better guys that I've covered. And I guess it's probably I don't know if that's saying a whole lot when I was very used to Josh Heupel and not really saying a whole lot. But at the same time, Lincoln Riley is just he's a stud, and you can obviously see why he is so good in the way that Oklahoma has been able to play with the losses of guys all over the offense here the last 2 years.
Well, Switzer and Stoops weren't head coaches either when they got hired. There's some precedent. Yeah. There's some precedent there. But on the other side of the ball, as for the other coordinator, Eddie, Mike Stoops taking heaps and heaps of pressure. And I'm kind of torn on this. Like, part of me says, yeah, when you pay a guy $900,000, you got to play better defense. But the other part of me says, you know, the guy didn't forget how to coach. They're basically number one in all the categories last year in the Big 12. But where I do think Mike has some criticism is they don't have the dudes they used to have, and your defensive coordinator has to recruit. So where do you fall on this whole Mike Stoops saga and people that want him gone? Just what do you see his future like at OU?
I feel like there should be some like dark, ominous music playing behind this this portion of the program. It's Mike Stoops cannot win. He cannot win doing anything right now with the Oklahoma fan base. And it's understandable. The frustration's understandable. But you're right, Carson. I mean, it was just a season ago, they played decent defense. And it certainly helped when you had guys like Charles Tapper and Eric Stryker. And, you know, even a guy like a Dominique Alexander who left early and kind of left them in a lull at linebacker. And I think he even made the Cleveland Browns roster. So where Mike Stoops probably deserves the biggest criticism is just his inability to, I think, to change. I think that a lot of the time they're trying to run this 3-4, 3-3-5 kind of defense. It's really just a hybrid of what they really want to do. They want to be able to play the 3-4, but as you said, they don't have the guys to do it. They're playing guys. Just look at Reuben Hunter, the middle linebacker that came in for Jordan Evans in the second half of the West Virginia game. And God love him, he's my man. He went to Putnam North, so he's my brother in that. But he's probably not the guy that you want out there if you're trying to stop one of the top rushing teams in the country. And, you know, he's a good special teams player, but that's probably about it. With that said, they've gone out in 2017 in this recruiting class, and they've gotten guys that I think can play long-term in the 3-4. They have the number three recruiting class in the country right now. They have really good guys coming in, but that certainly doesn't help you when you're trying to stop Chris Carson and Justice Hill and Mason Rudolph and the rest of the Big 12. So it's been a really frustrating year. They've had really good times, and I think that Mike Stoops might have put it the best way on Tuesday night when he said that they've been consistently inconsistent. And I think that, you know, I don't know if moving on from Oklahoma is in the equation for Mike Stoops. I think that it's certainly something that they're going to look at the end of the year. I don't think it's going to necessarily be a firing thing. But I do think that, you know, I wouldn't be just completely shocked if it was something to where, you know, Mike just said, I'm going to move on. I need to reinvent myself, get a little bit more confidence back in myself, and maybe go their separate ways. So it's going to be really interesting, though, because, you know, they haven't had the players. And yeah, they've been injured up front as well. And that's really kind of, I think, hurt them in ways that they probably never would have imagined. I don't think that they would have imagined that Matt Diamond and Charles Walker wouldn't have played the last six games, and that they wouldn't be on the roster as they go into Bethlehem here coming up in about a week and a half. And I don't think they would have imagined that Tay Evans was going to have to retire due to concussions, or that a guy like Mekhi Quick was going to miss 6 weeks because of a cheap shot against Texas. So it's been if it's not been one thing, it's been another. And they certainly haven't put together a complete game this year, but you know, I guess if you want to have one good shining moment for the Oklahoma defense, it's that they've forced seven turnovers in the last 2 weeks, and that's probably a reason why they've won both of those games. I think that that West Virginia game was probably skewed a little bit just because of West Virginia's inability to get the ball in the end zone when they were sitting in the red zone and ended up turning it over.
Are you guys still talking? Because I'm watching Andrew Wiggins' Snapchat of Zach LaVine doing a 360 from the free throw line.
I saw that in my feed, but I was nice enough not to click on it.
I just wish that I was athletic enough to do something that somebody was like, I stopped doing what I'm doing right now to watch what you did athletically. And I never had that ability. I never had that God-given grace. So
yeah, but people are stopping what they're doing on Thanksgiving weekend to listen to multiple podcasts that you're on. So that's something.
Well, my vocals are athletically gifted, so I guess that's the best way.
Okay, we'll get you out of here on this, Eddie. Mike Gundy, obviously a source of great delight amongst OSU fans. What's the perception? Because I think among OSU fans, I think Bob Stoops, among the intelligent ones anyway, he's viewed as obviously a great coach. And, you know, people who want to talk trash or whatever say that he can't win big games or whatever. But he's clearly a great coach. I'm curious about what the perception is among OU fans of Mike Gundy. Do they see him as a novelty act? Do they see him as a great coach? How do OU fans view him?
When you're rocking the cabbage like he is on the back of his neck, I don't see how you can't not like that. The only thing that would put it over the top is if he was just rocking the nastiest caterpillar on his upper lip. That would be awesome too. As far as Oklahoma fans, I don't see how you can't appreciate what he's done in Stillwater. I mean, is this not the – what is this? I think I saw you guys tweet earlier this week. It's the fourth time in 6 years that they're going in. Oklahoma State's going into the final weekend with a chance for a Big 12 title. Is that right?
Yeah, 11, yeah. 11, 13, 15, and this year, 16.
I mean, my God, I don't see how you couldn't like him. And if you don't like him, or if you don't at least respect what he's done in Stillwater, it's purely out of spite and just because you don't like Oklahoma State. And, you know, I think that it's pretty remarkable, too, that they've won so many close games. I think that just going back a couple of weeks ago, I thought that they might get beaten, or last week, I thought they might get beaten Fort Worth, and just because they had been playing with fire so much with close games, and somehow, some way, they found a way to win. And I don't think that I don't think it's ironic that Mike Gundy is their head coach. And I think that, you know, I think that given that what his situation is, and with his brother being down at OU, and you know, even go back to his college days, I think that that not little brother mentality necessarily, but just kind of that underdog and fighting it out, I think has really kind of rubbed off on the Oklahoma State program. And it's certainly put him in a good spot and a position that if they had an OU on the side of their helmet, they'd probably be playing for a playoff berth coming up this week or in 2 weeks. So yeah. I don't see how people can't like him. He's an awesome coach. And it's going to be interesting if LSU gets involved there. I don't know. What do you guys think? Is that a big conversation starter with Oklahoma State fans right now?
Well, I was talking to my wife about this last night, and you know, she was like, "What would you do if you were him and you're allegedly the third guy on LSU's list behind Tom Herman and Jimbo Fisher?" And to me, I mean, if somebody comes and almost, you know, offers you a 60% raise, I mean, what are you going to not listen to that? I know you went to Oklahoma State and you love it and Stillwater's great and you got tractors and whatever, but like it's a 60% raise. It's not a joke. And so I think if I was him, and I think probably what will play out depending on what happens with Jimbo Fisher and Tom Herman is you just use it to get a huge raise at Oklahoma State because you deserve it. I mean, and all these guys I think are underpaid based on how much revenue they bring in, but I think at $3.7 million, I think he's underpaid. I mean, that was less than what Art Briles was making, allegedly. I think that's probably how it will play out. I don't know. What do you think, Carson?
I agree. And not only is it a 60% raise, it's a chance to win national championships. Like, LSU is loaded for bear. So it just depends on, does Mike want to move his family to Baton Rouge? I think that's really what it comes down to. And does he want to be at a place where they can fire a coach who's won a national championship? And I don't think Mike's going anywhere, but I think he has to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got about 15 wild boosters compared to the big one.
Boone, yeah.
Baton Rouge. Those Eddie, people are insane.
Eddie, one last note. Can I just say that I love Baker Mayfield's new Bedlam tradition he started last year of the Fu Manchu, because he's a new sheriff in town. Like, can I just
is he doing it again this year?
He's doing it again. Yes.
I love that. The Fu Manchu versus the mullet. That's amazing.
Yeah, Eddie, didn't he say he is? And didn't he say like his two backups can't grow facial hair yet or something?
Yeah, Connor McGinnis and Tanner Schaefer, both walk-on quarterbacks. I think they have trouble growing it out. So he said that he's going to put a magic marker on them and finish it out for him. So I'm really hoping that's what happens.
That's a great tradition.
There is no doubt that Baker Mayfield is probably one of the top five cockiest persons I've ever been around. and that's a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing. He owns it, and I definitely don't think that that's taking a hit at Baker. That's the way he operates, and that's just him.
Eddie, when you and I were covering Landry Jones, we were begging for a quarterback like this. He is like the exact opposite of Landry.
Oh, yeah.
Landry's tall. He's short. He's cocky. Landry's not. He talks. Landry doesn't. It's like a polar opposite. It's in a good way.
Yeah.
No doubt. It's awesome.
I would love to see the text exchanges between him and Mason Rudolph, because I don't think there's any shortage of confidence between those two when it comes to football or life or any other extracurricular activities. Eddie, thanks for your time, man. We really appreciate it. Rest the vocals. Enjoy the green bean casserole. And we will be keeping up with you on Twitter and with Sooner Scoop throughout the next 2 weeks.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Anytime. I always enjoy coming on with you guys, and I love what you guys are doing. And just I'm hoping to just get unblocked by the Tulsa football program this week. That'd be my early Christmas present. So,
well, at least you're not blocked by OSU. That's what counts.
That's right. That's right. The two schools that matter in this state haven't blocked me. So there.
That'll help.
Right. See you, Eddie.
Okay, Eddie. Talk to you later.
See you, guys.
That's great. Who's the person that has you blocked, or organization that is the most frustrating or startling to you?
Kenny Stills blocked me.
Kenny Stills blocked you?
Yeah. I don't know why. I never really like came after him or anything. I just noticed one day, like, I used to follow him and like his tweets weren't showing up, and someone like, this is back when you had to like retweet with like the RT, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second. I haven't seen his tweets in like months. And I clicked on it. I was blocked. I'm not sure why. I think he might have just blocked all the media that were following him. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so.
What about you? I got a long list.
Yeah, there's some Oklahoma State employees, many of them, that I think have blocked me. I don't know in the golf world. I'm sure there are some. I'd be shocked if Ian Poulter hasn't blocked me. But yeah,
Patrick Reed maybe.
No, I love Patrick Reed.
Yeah, but you're always like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Tweeting about him flying on a bald eagle, he probably gets tired of that.
Yeah, he probably gets sick of it. Before we wrap up the Eddie Radosevic, is that how you say
Radosevic?
Radosevic. This is embarrassing. Before we wrap up that interview, what kind of coupe do you think Eddie drinks?
Oh, we should have asked him. But he goes hard before he goes home. He's going DNR. There's no question.
Is that a phrase? He goes hard before he goes home?
Go hard or go home.
Oh,
so,
okay. Well, yeah.
Play off that.
Yeah.
But I think I actually have had a couple DNRs with Eddie over the years.
I like it.
So I'm going DNR with him.
Okay. I'll text him right now, and maybe we can get an answer by the end of the podcast.
Okay.
Don't
you love the Baker Mayfield Fu Manchu thing? I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
Like his explanation was the best. He's like, there's a new sheriff in town when he was in Stillwater, which I'm sure OSU fans just want to puke when they hear that. But I think it's hilarious.
I think the whole thing, like the I don't know. It feels like a legit, I don't know about rivalry, but it just feels like a legit thing between a Mason Rudolph quarterback team and a Baker Mayfield quarterback team. I know Oklahoma State doesn't have the talent that OU has and whatever. But it just feels big time. You know, I know OU's won 8 in a row. Oklahoma State's won 7 in a row. I don't know. They're the two of the, I think, four longest streaks in the country. The only two longer are Western Michigan at 13 in a row and Alabama at 23 in a row. so, yeah, Bedlam's going to be amazing. I mean, I can't wait.
Well, yeah, and they're like apparently friends too. So there's like a friendly rivalry there, and you know they're texting before the game. So, I mean, he broke down Baker like how good he's been. He's been better than he was last year, but his numbers, Kyle, are better than Sam Bradford's. Basically, I mean, he has better completion percentage.
Yeah,
I think he has more yards. I think he might have less touchdowns by like a couple because Bradford threw 50 the year he won the Heisman. But he's been amazing, and Mason Rudolph's up there too. All those lists we keep seeing of like efficiency and rating and all that, Mason's they're 1, 2, 3 right there.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Fun. Yeah, and we've got another 10 days to talk about it. I want to talk actually before we talk basketball and before we talk college football playoff a little bit more. Let's hear from our sponsor, Chris's University Spirit.
Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom-printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head-to-toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit.
Okay, you want to talk basketball first? You want to talk college football playoff?
Well, along the lines of Chris's University Spirit, I want to hear your favorite uniform combo this season.
Okay, well, we should just turn that into, since there's not a game this week, yeah. Why don't we just make that our, I guess it's a uniform review.
Yeah, you just your favorite look. I've kind of gone over them over the week, and I think I have a pick.
Okay, let's get to this week's uniform review, season review, brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop on Campus Corner, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. By the way, Eddie said he's an IPA guy.
So okay.
The F5 IPA.
F5 all the way, then.
Yeah, We're making this into just a sponsored podcast. Like, we're just talking about our sponsors the whole time. What's your favorite look of the year for Oklahoma State?
Well, it comes down to two games, Texas and Central Michigan. And if, you know, the Texas game, they wore all black with the black, matte black with the Sheriff Star Marshall badge with chrome face masks. And in Central Michigan, they wore black helmet with Pistol Pete chrome face mask, but with the gray pants and black jersey. I feel like had they worn the Marshall badge on the Central Michigan look with the gray pants, that would be my number one.
Yeah.
But my number one's the all black against Texas with the Marshall badge has grown on me a lot just in the last few weeks. Just the more I look at it, the more I observe it compared to like the Pistol Pete and just the regular brand. I love it. I love it. It goes really well with the chrome stripe. The chrome star does.
Wait, so
I'm going Texas game.
So you liked? Oh, because I was thinking they did that for Tech also, but they wore the barbed wire.
Yeah, they wore the zany helmet.
That was the only difference between Tech and Texas. The Tech right. Texas game.
Yeah, the Texas. The helmet's so clean with the star and the chrome face mask, chrome stripe.
What is it about the Marshall badge?
I like it. I don't know why. I like it way better than the Pete. And as much as I love the brand, I kind of like the star. I kind of like it. I just think the silver star, I think, goes really well with the silver stripe. I think it just looks, and it makes the orange brand, I think, pop a little bit off the star. Now on TV, it's kind of hard to make out what it is at times until you get a close up. It's probably better close up than it is on TV, but as far as logos go, I like it. Right, it's right there with the regular brand for me.
Yeah, mine is mine's easy. Mine's homecoming, the black helmet, the throwback, I love the tricolor.
You're a sucker for tricolor.
Black helmet, orange top, white pants. I thought it was and it looked great because West Virginia went tricolor too. I thought that was a great uni matchup.
That helmet, it's sensational.
Yeah, I mean, it was just.
And did they retire just the matte black helmet with the regular brand on it? That's my number one helmet, or it was.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they go back to it and wear the same combo in this year in Norman that they did in 2014, because they wore that with the white and the orange pants, the Iowa State combo.
Yeah.
So
they haven't been very superstitious this year, but
I think
you get a little superstitious come Bedlam time. I think you do.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting.
I'm thinking that's probably what they'll wear.
I'm
disappointed if they don't wear the matte black helmet with the regular brand again. That's my number one helmet.
What's your favorite rivalry uni matchup?
Oh man. I love that USC and UCLA go color versus color.
Yes, yes.
But for me, it's pretty easy. It's Ohio State, Michigan for me. That's pretty easy.
I saw where Ohio State is apparently going to wear these LeBron cleats to match up against Michigan's Jordans.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm fired up. I'm fired up for Ohio State, Michigan. It's a good segue into our talk about the playoffs. Do you want to talk about the absurdity of it first, or about Oklahoma State's path to get in?
Talk about the show.
Okay. I'm just going to talk for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
The whole thing is a complete. Okay. So let me say this up front. I think the College Football Playoff Committee does a very good job. I do. I think they do a great job of figuring out who the four best teams in the country are. And that by definition, that's what they're supposed to do, figure out who are the four best teams. But the problem is that we allowed them to get away with at the very beginning, we allowed them to get away with these varied criteria that can change over time. And so it's like, I don't know what best means. You know, when we talk about who's the best quarterback in Oklahoma State history, that's such a wide ranging discussion that can mean any number of different things. Is it the best thrower? Is it the best winner? Is it the best, you know, the guy who gets the most yard? Like, what does it even mean? And so the playoff committee has given themselves this wiggle room of what does the best four teams mean? And now they say it means conference championships, but as we're about to find out, it actually doesn't, because Ohio State's going to get in and probably not play for its conference title this year. And so I hate that they sort of have taken away this mystique of, hey, if you win your games, if you win your conference championship, you can get into the playoff. That's what sports is about. Sports are about upset. It's not about they've made it about who has the best talent and not about who actually wins the games, you know? And so teams like Ohio State and even USC and Alabama, because they're perceived as great teams, which they are, they'd have the most talent. Nobody is arguing that. But because that's their perception, they almost have to not disprove something. So they have to almost not lose too many times. Whereas a team like Oklahoma State or Baylor or TCU has to literally win all of its game. They have to prove that they're better than their talent. And so you're starting from different beginning points. The start of the race is not equitable. And I hate that. I think it's stupid.
I agree. I mean, the fact that certain teams start above one another just based on helmets and perception rather than results on the field is silly. And how asinine was the show last night? They start by talking for 15 minutes about USC, who has three losses.
It's incredible. And they talked about how they changed quarterbacks, so now they're better. Well, no crap. Why didn't they start that? I mean, like...
Joey Galloway brought some reality to the situation. Like, he was on their team. It's not like they got some transfer in. Like... because they started the wrong quarterback, that gives them an out. Like, they wasted so much time talking about USC, who has no chance at the playoff. It was absurd. And if USC was named Washington, even Washington, let alone like Washington State, if they had three losses, they're not even talking about them. But because they're USC, because of the helmet they have, they're like, oh, well, no one wants to play USC right now. They look great.
Well, and
like,
somebody
give me a physical break.
Somebody tweeted this, but they said that the playoff committee has USC underrated at 11. Vegas would favor them as the number three team in the country. It's like, well, let's just let Vegas decide. You know, you might as well. Yeah. I mean, and nobody, like, I don't disagree that USC right now is the third best team in the country. They would be favored against 125 other teams, but again, like you're
disqualified themselves.
Well, like your colleague Brian Keating has been saying, why even play the games? What's the point if you're just going to say, well, these teams look like the best, so whatever.
Yeah. Hang on, I got to grab my charger from my computer. I'm yelling too much in the microphone. All right, sorry about that.
That's okay.
At risk of sounding like, you know, woe is me, OSU person, they spend 20 minutes talking about USC, who has three losses, and they don't even, like, talk about OSU, who's 10th, who basically has two losses, but probably one, has one of the more, like, compelling arguments for being a one-loss team with a controversial loss. Like, you have an hour-long show. And they didn't even talk about Central Michigan, did they? I see these quotes from Kirby Hokut. I don't remember seeing him talk about that. Was that after the show?
Yeah, they do this teleconference, I believe, after the show.
Okay, I was going to say, because I swear I didn't hear anything about it. They spent 20 minutes talking about USC, and they don't even approach Oklahoma State, who has, as Barry Trammell pointed out really well in his column today in the Oklahoman, like, Oklahoma State probably has a better shot at the playoff.
Well,
than Oklahoma.
In one sense, yes, they do, because they didn't get housed by Ohio State. But in the other sense, they lost, quote unquote, lost to Central Michigan. So,
but as Barry points out, there's no way they're counting that as a loss. There's no way they would have OSU at 10 if they viewed that as a loss to a 6-6 Central Michigan. Because as Barry pointed out as well, Houston lost to SMU and they're 20. They beat OU. They beat the brakes off OU. And they're 20. There's no way OSU would be 10 if they're counting that as a loss. There's no way.
Did you see the stat that Jake Trotter tweeted out?
The OSU's beaten 5 of ESPN's top 40 of FPI.
Yeah, the only other team that's done that is Alabama.
Yeah, and no one will. That didn't even get brought up on the show on ESPN. Who has that's their rating? Like that, at risk of sounding like the OSU dude who gets no respect, like. Why have an hour-long show if you're not going to talk about, like, one of the more fascinating cases? Like, USC has no chance. Why did they waste? Oh, it just goes all over me. They wasted 20 minutes talking about USC.
Yeah.
Why do I even watch this show? I tell myself that
every week. Yeah, and I mean, the piece that I wrote today, the playoff committee is trying to run the simulation that we used to run on NCAA football when we wanted to get the year over with. You know, you just simulate the rest of the season. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to simulate the season and say, well, I know Ohio State lost, but they would have won if you played the season, you know, 1,000 times, because they're the best team. And I get it. Like, Ohio State is one of the four best teams. Nobody does not think that. But again, we love sports because of the absurd things that can happen, like Ohio State losing to Penn State on the road to a bad Penn State team, as you pointed out, or an average. They're average.
Not good.
That's why we love sports. That's the point. You have to play the games. You don't have this subjective committee doing, you know, holding up 9s and 10s and 8s from the sideline.
Well, and you brought this up too. Like, if Penn State wins the Big Ten and Ohio State beats Michigan,
it's going to be
and
glorious.
If they put Ohio State over a team from their division who won their conference, like, fair, like that would be an absolute travesty. Like, they have a conference division for a reason. They beat Ohio State fair and square. They won their division fair and square, and then they won their conference fair and square. And you're still going to say, well, I just think Ohio State's better. Like, that goes against the sport. I don't think they have the enough, you know what, to do that. I just don't. I think it might happen, but I just think they'll look at it and say, this goes against every ounce of sporting, you know, sportsmanship or the reason we have a sport.
Yes.
I don't think they'll be able to do it. Cause like, this isn't a case of, like, you know, Alabama versus OSU in 2011. It's like, well, they can't help what conference they're in. They were in the same conference, the same division. They won it by their own conference rules. I even had Caden McFarland from Channel 2 in Tulsa tweeting at me, like, well, last year, like, Michigan State got destroyed by Alabama. I much rather would have seen Ohio State and Ezekiel Elliott play Alabama. Well, I would have too. It would have been a better game, but they lost that right. They lost on their home field to Michigan State, and Michigan State won the Big Ten. Like, we can't sit here and go, well, they have Ezekiel Elliott, I'd rather watch them play Alabama. If that's how you want to do it, just let play who schedule whoever you want, and at the end of the year that we'll pick the four best teams with the most pros on it.
That's what I've been saying. Most pros. Just talk to some NFL. Get the NFL scouts in a room with like the odds makers in Vegas, and just let them pick the teams.
And I'm basically arguing for Iowa. Penn State is like this year's Iowa. I don't think they're any good. I don't think they deserve to be in there. I don't think they could hang with Ohio State if they played again. But you know what? They beat them. And if they win on Saturday, they're going to win their division, and they're probably going to win the Big Ten. So
I want the committee to have to choose between 11-2 Penn State and 11-1 Ohio State. I really do. Like, I want that to happen. I mean,
don't you want – that would be great. But don't you want the committee have to pick between 11-1 Oklahoma State and don't you want the Ohio State Oklahoma State scenario as well?
Well, you could also get that, but because the Penn State Ohio State thing, I think, could push this playoff to eight teams, which I think is what it should be. Because that's a mess.
In a weird way, I don't want it to be eight teams. Is that
really?
Am I talking out of both sides of my mouth?
You kind of are, because you're advocating for. Well, you're either advocating for. Eight teams, or you're saying, yeah, you're saying you like it the way it is, or you want a different system for picking the teams.
I don't want two things. I don't want an 8-team playoff because I think that waters it down and it makes it even harder to win it's so hard to win a national title in this current structure. Add four more teams to a playoff? Are you kidding me? Like, good luck.
Yeah.
So, part of me likes the fact that it's only four, but it's going to leave out a conference champ every year. That doesn't work either.
But
so
you want to determine,
maybe it needs to be eight.
You want to determine them in a different way. How would you determine them? How would you pick the four teams?
Well, I would honestly, like, this committee does less than nothing for me. I would go back to computers. Like, I thought the BCS, in what instance did the BCS ever really get it wrong on the numbers?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but
maybe OU and Auburn, maybe Florida State and Miami when Florida State lost to OU.
But I'm pretty sure
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure the BCS would have Ohio State in the playoff.
I don't know. I'm talking out of like three sides of my mouth. But don't you think an 8-team playoff is almost too many teams?
Yeah, I guess. Well, then make it.
Do the top four get byes? Like, how are we doing this?
I don't know. My idea is top four get to play at home in the first round. Part of what's great is playing on these campuses. I mean, can you imagine playing like Oklahoma State going to Bama in mid December for my gosh, that would be that would be incredible. I mean, we get beat by 50, but it'd be incredible.
That'd be amazing.
So, yeah, my dream scenario is Penn State winning out, Ohio State winning out, the committee either taking both of them and leaving out Washington or Clemson, and or having to leave one of them out and having to pick between one of them.
See, I think they have to leave Ohio State out as highly as they think of them, surely.
Man, can
there's
you
no,
imagine?
There's no way they like, –
can you imagine,
how would they sit there and justify leaving – a conference champ from the ACC or Pac-12 out? At that point, you're basically saying you're screwing over a conference or two.
Yeah. Well, but can you imagine the outrage from Ohio State people and Urban Meyer? And I mean,
don't lose to a two loss team. I mean,
I agree.
Win your division.
I agree, but it just, whew, that'd be intense.
You know what else has happened in the last 2011? Bama didn't win their division, did they?
Correct.
When they got to play for the national championship.
Well, and this is my thing. Why does Bama not just? And I texted you this. Why does Bama not just forfeit your next two games? You've already proven you're the best team. Like, why do you even need to play? I mean, and is this not the logic that we're using? Like, they're the best team. Clearly, they can. Nobody thinks that they would be kept out with a loss against Auburn or even against Florida. So just forfeit them. Save your guys. Don't get them hurt. Just wait till the end of December. I mean, but this is the absurdity of it, right? Like, you have proven yourself, and this is the thing about Ohio State. Like, I think they want to win this week and then not have to go to the Big Ten title game because you don't have an opportunity to lose.
Yeah.
And so you can just say, well, we would have smoked Wisconsin, you know. They already did.
Well, and what's amazing about how great everyone thinks Ohio State is, they won by a point against a 4-7 team last week. Like, they're not this invincible juggernaut, you know what I mean? Like, just, yes, we all agree Ohio State's probably one of the four best teams, but I'm sorry, you disqualify yourself if you don't win your own division. There's a reason we have conferences, there's a reason we have divisions. I'm so fascinated. I'm with you. I don't want the committee to get an easy decision. Mm-hmm. I don't want all the teams to win out in a certain way to where they don't have to make a tough call.
Yeah.
What do you think happens if Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma? And obviously, let's say, you know, they need Michigan to win out. They need the Pac-12 to lose.
Here's what you really need. You really need Ohio State to beat Michigan and Michigan State to beat Penn State. But because I don't trust Michigan State to beat Penn State, then the safest bet is to root for Michigan and have them go to the Big Ten title and win it, presumably.
With a backup quarterback, and they could lose that. Who's coming out of the other side of the Big Ten? Wisconsin?
Yeah, Wisconsin.
They could lose that game. It's not over yet, the Big Ten. Even if...
Can Wisconsin get in the playoff?
They win the Big Ten.
And I'm going to write about this. So if you're an Oklahoma State fan, you're rooting for Washington State, you get your Ryan Leaf jersey out. You
wave
need,
the flag.
You need Washington State to win badly. And then you're rooting for either Ohio State and Michigan State or Michigan. So you have to root for one of those two sides, Ohio State and Michigan State. Michigan State has to beat Penn State. Or,
I need like a flow chart here.
Or Michigan to beat Ohio State. You can't root for – you have to root for one or the other because you need Ohio State or Michigan to win the Big Ten.
Are you going to have Chris Knox make a flow chart for us?
Yeah, we should. We should.
A rooting guide?
I think a fascinating scenario that could happen is, what if Michigan wins the Big Ten and let's say Washington loses to Washington State. So you got Michigan in, Clemson in, Alabama in. And what if OU just smokes Oklahoma State and Norman? And they're 10-2 Big 12 champs, but Ohio State's 10-2 and lost at Penn State and to Michigan.
But beat OU and Norman.
But hammered OU and Norman. What would the committee do?
Never had the case where they've had to weigh they've always said that they would weigh a conference championship. And I think but this would be an ultra, ultra rare case where they'd played head to head.
Yeah.
Not only head to head, but on OU's home field. It's not like they played in Orlando.
Yeah.
So I think they'd probably take Ohio State.
I think I think the committee would take OU. I think if it was Oklahoma State and Ohio State, I think they might take Ohio State. I really do.
I think you're right. And that's what's galling about this entire thing.
Yeah. I mean, I just I don't know.
Although Oklahoma State doesn't have the Ohio State problem. They didn't lose to them already by 21.
Yeah, that's true.
And it wasn't that close, really.
That's true. It's going to be, I mean, like I said.
But Kyle, we don't even need to, like, get – I hate to be Debbie Downer. We don't even need to get fired up because when has Oklahoma State ever gotten the benefit of any doubt when it comes to this arbitrary college football system? They're not getting in the playoff, even if they beat OU by 50.
I think you're right. I do. I mean, I'm with you. I don't. And it always works out like this, which kind of is both good, but it's also frustrating. It always works out to where I say always. They've done it for 2 years. It has seemingly always worked out to where the choice is pretty clear. Your top four, you know. I want there to be six, and I want the logical fallacies to be abundant amongst the broadcasters and the. And the committee. I mean, I want to be glued to my TV the Sunday after Bedlam, waiting to see which four teams pop up. What if you brought this up? What if Virginia Tech beats Clemson in the ACC?
Well, yeah, like everyone keeps forgetting about Clemson. Like everyone's like, oh, pull against Washington, pull against Michigan or Ohio State. Like Clemson hasn't looked like a juggernaut either. They've lost to Pitt. They could have lost a couple more. They could very easily lose the ACC title game, which would open up another spot. At this point, you're hoping for the Pac-12 and ACC to just totally implode. Then you have a real shot.
Well, and this just highlights the issue. Like, you can look at Clemson and say, well, they had to play a 13th game, and OU and Oklahoma State didn't. And it just highlights, and Joel Klatt talked about this last week, it highlights the insanity of trying to measure inequitable things. You're trying to measure a 13-game schedule against a 12-game schedule, and you're not even playing close to the same team. I mean, the whole thing is it's fun. It's fun to sit here and talk about some for the most part, but it's also frustrating, and it has to be frustrating for the coaches and players who feel like they're a little bit out of control of their own destiny.
Yeah, for sure. But I think Gundy looks brilliant now that he's kept bringing up the Central Michigan game. He needs to make that a – if they beat Oklahoma, he needs to do something drastic.
The rant.
After the game. I don't know if he needs to do the rant. He needs to – I don't know if he wants to make a snow angel that spells out 11-1, if he wants to wave a flag that says 11-1. He needs to – he needs to garner national headlines for doing something out of the ordinary. Don't you agree?
What about this? What if he just shaved 11-1 into the back of his mullet?
Yeah, just the sides, the Boz kind of.
Yeah, and came to the press conference in Norman like that, having just beaten OU.
Well, I'm joking about the manner in which I want him to go about it, but I think he needs to make some sort of statement or comments to where he leads around the horn and First Take and all the talk shows, to where he makes it a national talking point, or else Oklahoma State's just going to get swept under the rug.
Well, but the
final playoff rankings.
But the playoff rankings come out. Don't they come out that Sunday, the day after?
Yes, they do, actually. Yeah. But
but to your point,
it'll lead sports. They'll bring him on live on SportsCenter if he makes some sort of definitive, come after me. maybe he doesn't do the rant. I mean, the rant, people know him still just because of the rant. He needs to. Do you agree with me? Doesn't he need to do something to get this out in the forefront?
I do.
Because it went completely unnoticed on the hour. They had a freaking hour-long TV show and didn't even talk about it.
Well, and Kirby Hokut said, we're aware of it. And it's like, okay, whatever.
Ranked 10th, so obviously they don't think that's a loss.
Since this is
how are they not talking about it?
Since this is our 100th podcast, can you I've asked you to do this multiple times, but it just slays me every time. Can you do your favorite part from the rant? Hello.
I hope someday you have a child who come. Let me start over here. I never do the beginning part. It's like, one of these days you're going to have a child. Or wait, I forget how it goes. There he goes. Screw the beginning part. Who comes home upset? Has he dropped a pass in a pickup game? that was unfiltered Mike Gundy. I've talked to people that know him, and they say that is as unfiltered as you're ever going to see him, is right there. And it's so true, because a lot of his go-to phrases, society today that we live in, and they all kind of crept in there. So
Eddie,
I think he needs to go. He said he was going to go on the rant for his 50th birthday or whatever the hell. He needs to do it after the game if they beat OU.
Eddie dropped a world we live in on us earlier.
Couple of them. I was chuckling.
That was terrific. Okay, let's talk hoops before we get out of here. Juwan Evans, it might be the best player in the Maui Invitational.
Might be the best player in the country.
He's amazing.
At one point in the game, I kind of felt for Jay Billis, because he was you could almost hear him shrugging in his voice after every made basket by Evans. He was just he ran out of adjectives and superlatives. At one point he was just what can't this kid do? He was dumbfounded by how good he is. And I was too. He was awesome. But I know people are down on him now because they lost by 35 and they got a little bit, exposed inside. But North Carolina played for the national title last year and brought back a lot of the guys. And they even said, I think someone commented on your five thoughts. A North Carolina fan said, look, we kind of played over our heads in that game. So it was like a perfect storm. Like they played a team that was a lot better than them, and that team played over their heads.
Yeah, and Roy Williams said that afterwards. He's like, we were jacked up for Oklahoma State, which is pretty cool to hear from somebody like Roy Williams, because he said they bring the most energy of anybody that we've seen all year. Now, I don't know who North Carolina's played. They played Chaminade and probably, I don't know, did they play a Kentucky or somebody early? I don't remember. But he really talked up the way that Oklahoma State played, and the Carolina guy, Justin Jackson, I think was his name. He's built like RoboCop. He said the same thing. He's like, we knew we had to come out with a lot of energy because Oklahoma State gets after it. They play great D. Now they play great D. They've given up 90 or more 3 times out of 5 games now. So I don't know how great right. the D is, but. Yeah, I don't know. There's just some sort of in I think part of the thing is just being the guy that follows the guy that nobody really liked that much is there's going to be an inherent optimism for a while. But it does seem like this team is just more fun to watch. I don't know. Did you pick that up from watching them?
Oh, I tweeted that like the difference between a Travis Ford coach team and a Brad Underwood is like trying to measure the depth of the galaxy. Like it is night and day. Like it is so vast. It is immeasurable. Like you were tweeting vines and stuff from the first game. It's like, this is actual basketball.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And it really kind of like frustrated me because I remember when you started your blog in 2011, that's when I wanted Ford gone. That's when I knew like this guy has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it was unwatchable. And just to see a team have a system and know what they're trying to do and just executing it and just really how hard they play stood out to me more than anything. Obviously, the X's and O's stood out. Obviously, Underwood knows what he's doing. But just like how hard they played, like we haven't seen that since Eddie Sutton.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think my lone complaint with Juwan Evans is that sometimes it feels a little Marcus Smartish, a little hero ballish. They haven't run the motion offense that Underwood employs very much or very successfully. Now, part of that is you don't have any guys. I mean, Mitch Solomon, God bless him. He's not a rim runner. You're not going to be throwing oops to Mitch Solomon.
Not much scoring on the team.
Leighton no. Hammonds is not. He's not really a finisher. You know, Jeffrey Carroll is playing well, but it's just. Juwan Evans doesn't have a ton of help offensively, and so that's part of it. But I do want to see them and him be a little bit more efficient on offense. But, I mean, otherwise, I don't know. It seemed like UConn and North Carolina hit a lot of three-pointers, so maybe your perimeter defense isn't that great. But I trust that Underwood is smart enough to make adjustments, whereas I don't know that we ever felt like that in the Travis Ford era.
Heck no. Heck no. But the problems they're going to run into, Kyle, is when they play teams that are athletic like North Carolina, like Phil Forte is pretty limited.
Yeah, I know.
He can't do a haul. What do you take, 3 shots?
Yeah, he was 0 for 3, 2 points.
Like he can't quite be as effective. So that's an adjustment Brad Underwood's going to have to make is how does he get him more looks, more clean looks, and just the depth. After Juwan and Carroll and some of those guys, some of the guys in their starting unit, like it's if they get in foul trouble or any injuries, it could be big trouble just because they don't have a lot of depth.
It might be more like when they get in foul trouble. I mean, the thing about Forte though is like North Carolina is like the most athletic team in the country behind.
They might be the Jay Billis said he'd rank them number one in the country. So
yeah,
like,
so it's not yeah.
It's like twofold. Like UConn stinks, but they're UConn, so people got a little too excited.
Yeah.
But like North Carolina is like the best team in the country, so they're like a little too down that loss.
I think Georgetown's gonna be interesting. People might be listening to this podcast after the Georgetown game, but they're ranked 25th. You know, they're playing in the third place game. They got beat by Tennessee, Oregon, somebody, Wisconsin,
yeah.
So I think that is a. I think North Carolina is a good barometer, but I think Georgetown could be a good win for Oklahoma, a great win for Oklahoma State. You beat a top 25 Georgetown team in Maui. I mean, that's a big deal, and I think that could really set the tone for the rest of the non-conference season.
oh, you win against Georgetown. It's been a great trip, like fantastic, like yeah. exceeding expectations type trip.
Yeah, totally.
I do worry about it being the third game in 3 days, and they played so late last night. I do worry about that, but we'll see.
Yeah, should be fun. Okay, Thanksgiving plans, you hanging with your parents?
Yep, in Edmond, Oklahoma. I'll be working. I'll be on Channel 5, but I'll have plenty of turkey and gravy.
Nice.
Macaroni and cheese.
I like it.
What was your favorite? You never said.
I like the my mom makes this macaroni and cheese casserole that is just delicious.
Oh, that sounds good.
I mean, you want to die after you eat it, but
that's what Thanksgiving's for, though, you know.
Yeah, it's great. I'm a big like post Thanksgiving make the turkey sandwich type deal.
Oh yeah,
I like that a lot.
Yeah, the leftovers are great.
Yeah, and I guess my favorite, my grandma used to make these homemade noodles that were like kind of noodles and gravy-ish, which sounds, yep. again, like death, but...
that's great. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Really, really good. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend. Ton of football.
Yeah, we get the weekend off to kind of sit back.
Yeah.
I want Chris Knox to make us a flow chart so I can track the wins and losses.
I'm actually working on my shed this weekend. I'm gonna finish the outside, so should be a good weekend. I'm excited about it.
Nice.
Okay.
Episode 100 in the books.
Yeah, we will hopefully be here for another 100 or so. Carson, have a good Thanksgiving, and we will talk to you at the beginning of next week. Bedlam week.
Back at it. Have a good Thanksgiving, man.
See you.